You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We're going to have Sonia Cooper from Cooper Legal, a specialist firm in Wellington, which deals with historic abuse and human rights cases. Caitlin interviewed her and they spoke about the impact compensation payments received by the Crown have on means-tested benefits. This has come up in the news because previously an unused regulation which defines the Crown compensation payment as an income asset has been started being used by WINS.
So the claims that we deal with are people who have been in care mainly and who've suffered abuse in care. So we're dealing in the main with clients who were children in care through the various forms of the now Ministry of Social Development. We also have clients who were in psychiatric hospital care. We have clients who were in residential schools where they suffered abuse, and other kind of government agencies where they've suffered abuse. But the vast majority of our clients have been in care, in social welfare care of some sort. And that dates from the 1950s through to the current date. So our job is to settle their claims, to get a recognition and acknowledgement of the abuse that they've suffered in care, and then to get along with that an apology for that abuse and compensation, monetary compensation, to try and put right the wrong that's been done to the claimants who've suffered abuse.
And so it's Tony Jarvis has come forward as, discussing his compensation claim. Mm-hmm. He's now 55,
yes.
And this was childhood abuse. So these claims take a long time to go through, is that right?
Yes, Tony, I think, has been a client of the firm for probably about 12, 13 years. It's fair to say that when I started this work back in the 1990s, the government wasn't really wanting to recognise them, and in fact, really up until the mid to later 2000s, put up a very big fight to actually have to pay any money at all. There are a number of defences that the Crown can rely on, and the most difficult one for us to get through is legislation called the Limitation Act, which says that all claims have to be brought within a specified time frame. These clients, because of the abuse that they've suffered, and because typically they will have long-term literacy issues, they will have low education, they will have mental health issues, alcohol and drug issues, they won't actually recognise that the harm that they've suffered has actually been caused by what happened to them as a child. So they won't actually know to instruct a lawyer and actually come and get some compensation. And the government has relied on that defence of the Limitation Act, which the courts have interpreted in a very, very harsh manner, to actually say, well, they're not entitled to any compensation. So we've had to put a lot of pressure on the government through national and international bodies, because the courts haven't been very helpful. We've had to put a lot of pressure on the government through the Human Rights Commission and through the United Nations Committee Against Torture, and the Human Rights Committee and at the United Nations, to put pressure on the government to actually pay compensation, because that's internationally an obligation New Zealand has to do. And that has resulted in all of the government departments who had children in their care putting into place their own ADR, so alternative dispute resolution processes, under which they pay compensation. It's very low, it's nominal, and it certainly doesn't reflect at all the harm, the actual long-term harm that these clients have suffered as a result of the abuse. Now, one of the things that is an effect of abuse, of course, is the lack of education, the mental health problems, drug and alcohol problems, is that a large percent of these clients will either be in prisons or they will be beneficiaries. And this, the regulations that came into force in 2011, which is when we started to implement big settlements at that stage, like we settled in 2012, 320 psychiatric hospital claims, they affect beneficiaries. So what these regulations say is if you've got any compensation from the Crown, and that's whether or not you get it ordered by a court or whether it's through an alternative dispute resolution process, unless you've got rid of it within 12 months, the government can take that into account in assessing your eligibility for your benefit. So they look at it in two ways. They look at it both as a capital asset and as an income asset. So as I say, they will penalise you if you've got any of that money left after a year in terms of your ongoing eligibility for your benefit.
Categorising it as a capital asset as well as an income asset does seem like double dipping by the government. I mean, you can't say on the one hand this is an asset that you have, like a car, but also you can derive income from this, so we're going to, no matter what you do with it, we're going to catch this. What's the point of having, especially because this is compensation received by the Crown, which means that the Crown has acknowledged wrongdoing, to then turn around and say, and now we are going to dock your benefit as a result? It seems like a little bit of a kick in the teeth after you've finally got the government to admit that they've done something wrong. I mean, why is this regulation still in place?
Well, I don't think... You see, MSD, the Ministry of Social Development, and in fact none of the government departments have ever brought this to anyone's attention. And we've been settling claims, obviously, for a long time. And as far as we are aware, up until this year, I don't actually think it's been implemented. And it actually got brought to our attention specifically because I think it's only from this year, really, that it seems to be being implemented by Work and Income. And that's kind of awful as well, because it's this year that the government implemented its, the Ministry of Social Development implemented its fast-track process to fast-track payments to about 500 to 700 victims of abuse as children in care. And this is the year they're now starting to penalise those beneficiaries of claims by saying, if you haven't spent it in a year, we're going to look at it.
To have this regulation sitting on the books for so long, never being used. I mean, the government, for various reasons, has been paying out compensation for a long time. And to suddenly, you know, put in fast track processes in place, and on the one hand to go, cool, we're going to sort this out as soon as possible, but now we've also found this little used regulation over here that we're going to use to mitigate the amount of money that the government ultimately has to pay out. Is that...
I think it's totally draconian.
Conspiracy theory, but I mean, it does seem very, very cynical on the government's part, and it does seem underhanded, to say the least.
I think it's absolutely cynical on the government's part. And as I say, it was implemented in 2011, which is just before we settled 320 psychiatric hospital claims. So you know, when you think about that timing, these regulations were implemented just before we were coming to settle, you know, hundreds of claims, and now it seems to be being implemented as the government is settling hundreds of more claims in respect of children who were abused in care. And most, of course, the psychiatric hospital claims that we settled in 2012 were children abused in care as well. So, yeah, it's absolutely cynical. And it's kind of like it's such a disincentive for this client group to save anything, to actually improve their longer-term life prospects, which, after all, have been damaged because of the abuse they suffered at the hands of people employed by the Crown.
Because we did touch on the long-term effects of abuse. Because, we're talking physical abuse, we're talking sexual abuse.
Psychological abuse, we're talking kids who've been locked in seclusion. We've talked, absolutely extreme sexual and physical abuse. And that also, sort of also abuse kind of implemented by other kids, but at the direction of staff. So we're talking about you know, our clients have been kind of put into placements, into residences and institutions where they've had no support, where they've had very little social work input, and where they've been abused by foster parents, by family home parents, by residential staff, by other kids with whom they've been placed in care because supervision is slack, and or there is actually a kind of institutional violence that is accepted. And that causes catastrophic and long-term effects. And the more research that is done about victims of abuse, the more we know that those are effects that actually most people never fully recover from, if they recover from them at all. So, yes, it's highly cynical for the state to give what is an insulting amount of compensation in the first place, and then say if there is something left of that insulting amount of compensation that we're then going to dock your benefit, or perhaps take it away from you completely.
To end up in state care or in one of these facilities in the first place, clearly something has not been great in your childhood to get there. So you've got that first of all, plus all of the psychological damage from everything that happens to you in state care. I mean, in terms of what these payments could and should mean for people to get their lives together and to, you know, put stuff in place for their kids or their family or whoever they are supporting, it does just seem grossly unfair to then kind of turn around and then take the idea of that security of that money, you know, well, we've got this little nest egg here and that's okay. I mean, Tony spent his on a car.
Yeah, which is a depreciating asset. And, I mean, most people won't have even got enough compensation to buy a car, or if they have a, you know, a cheap dunger that's probably not going to last them very long. And that's right. I mean, you know, as I say, what incentives are there for them to improve their long-term situation? None. Absolutely no incentives. And this is a group that has been impoverished already because of what's happened to them as a child in care.
And this is also the group, I think that the effects of abuse and how that, you know, stays with a person for decades is often not particularly well understood. And then the reasons, I mean, you know, to put it mildly, but then the reasons that people end up on benefits, you know, in their 50s or that they've been on there for decades or whatever it is, those are also often not well understood. And so it does seem like a cycle that is potentially not going to be fully understood by the mainstream public. I mean, what are you going to do with the other people that work in this area? I don't want to put it all on you. But what's the plan? What's the plan here to get this archaic and unfair regulation thrown out or whatever happens
well,
to
it? Well, I've really issued a challenge to the Human Rights Commission to take this on. I mean, the Human Rights Commission has been aware for a long time about the issues caused, you know, by the government's handling of the historic abuse claims. And it's kind of really sat on the fence, with all due respect to it, for some years now. It was actively engaged for a while, and then it just kind of has sat back. I think this is an issue for the Human Rights Commission to pick up and actually take on, you know, to get the government to actually get rid of these regulations. From our perspective, I mean, this is, you know, these are regulations, so this is law. There is, you know, other than actually lobbying, doing stuff like this, doing interviews and lobbying, there is not a lot that we can actually do legally because it requires a legislative change, and that requires the politicians to do something. So getting on the radio, you know, doing media stuff about it is what we can do to help here, and to actually say to the public bodies that have responsibility for these victims in terms of enforcing their rights, their international rights to appropriate compensation and rehabilitation, that's their job to really pick this up with government and make sure that some change is made.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.